The Tomtebo project is located in central Sweden. We've had a lot of success with drilling it. We've more recently brought in Boliden as a partner. We've brought in more base metal polymetallic projects. But in 2022, we also added uranium polymetallic projects to our portfolio. And that's when we really started to see a surge in our share price.
We got Garrett Ainsworth, CEO, President, Director of District Metals. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. Yeah. Great to meet you and have this interview today.
Yeah. Well, Garrett, it's been a great meeting you as well. You are in British Columbia, but I think your projects are primarily in Sweden. If you can tell us a bit about District Metals, your history, maybe a bit about you, and just what we need to know about who you guys are.
Yeah. So maybe I'll just start off about myself. I'm a geologist by training. Spent a lot of my career in the Athabasca Basin. Had a lot of success exploring and discovering high-grade uranium deposits. I was the VP exploration for Alpha Minerals. Took a lead role in the discovery of the Triple R deposit. Won a industry award in 2013 for that. Alpha Minerals got bought out by Fission Uranium for $189 million. In November of 2013. Then I went on to NexGen Energy as a VP exploration and development in 2014. Had a lot of success, obviously, with the Arrow discovery and other discoveries within the Southwest Athabasca Basin of Northern Saskatchewan. When I joined NexGen, the market cap was about $50 million. When I left, the market cap was about $3 billion. Obviously, the Arrow deposit is now turned into one of the best undeveloped uranium deposits in the world. When I left NexGen in 2018, I won a few industry awards for my work there on the Arrow deposit and also within that part of the Athabasca Basin. Then in 2018, I got a hold of District Metals as a shell company, and we took about a year and a half to find a project that we could get really excited about, and that was our Tomtebo project in Sweden. So that was about 2020. We acquired it. The Tomtebo project is located in central Sweden. We've had a lot of success with drilling it. We've more recently brought in Boliden as a partner. We've brought in more base metal polymetallic projects. But in 2022, we also added uranium polymetallic projects to our portfolio. And that's when we really started to see a surge in our share price. Obviously, new government came in late 2022. They started talking about lifting the current uranium moratorium. So we've picked up five uranium polymetallic projects, with the most significant one being our Viken deposit. It hosts the Viken Energy Metals deposit, and it's the second largest uranium deposit in the world after BHP's Olympic Dam. In the inferred category, there's 1.5 billion pounds of uranium. There's about 24 billion pounds of vanadium, and then all sorts of other metals like nickel, molybdenum, copper, zinc. There's also potash. There's phosphate, other rare earth elements as well. And more recently on the uranium moratorium, the government has made a lot of very solid moves in terms of making that lift happen. And it looks like we're set for a vote on a bill to lift the uranium ban on mining to happen in the fourth quarter of this year. So we've seen, a lot of very positive share price action related to that event happening.
So you said that you guys are the second largest uranium in the mining the world?
Deposit in the world, yep.
Wow. In Sweden,
yep.
Do a lot of people associate Sweden with uranium?
They have in the last uranium cycle. There was a company called Continental Precious Minerals that was developing the Viken deposit in the last uranium bull market. They reached a market cap of $330 million. Our current market cap is around $110 million. So it is being known to contain about 33% of uranium resources for Europe. But there hasn't been any modern mining of uranium in Sweden, but obviously, you know, due to the geopolitical turmoil going on, the European Union is looking to Sweden to help steady some supply of uranium, because right now the supply of uranium to Europe is very high risk. Obviously, I believe a few years ago, 69% of the Europe's uranium supply came from Niger, Russia, and Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. Niger has more recently stopped supplying the EU with uranium. Russia is a high-risk supplier of uranium. And Kazakhstan stated late last year that they're finding it more challenging to supply the West with uranium, given pressure from Russia and China. So everything's aligned, really well. And we're really excited for this potentially transformational political decision to come later this year on lifting of the uranium ban.
So before we talk about the uranium ban and what we have going on between the countries, if you could tell us a little bit more about what you have there, what do you have at Viken? If you can tell us about what you're finding besides the size of it.
Yeah. So the Viken property, it's very large. It's just under 40,000 hectares. We put out a resource, I believe it was at the end of April. So to make it a current NI 43-101 resource, the inferred category was 4.3 billion tons of material. Again, 1.5 billion pounds of uranium, 24.3 billion pounds of vanadium, billions and billions of pounds of the molybdenum, nickel, copper, zinc, substantial amount of potash, phosphate, rare earth elements. And, historically, the assays did not include the full suite of rare earth elements. So that's something that we'll be looking to do, is to assay historical drill core for all of the rare earth elements after the uranium moratorium is hopefully lifted later this year. The size of the Viken deposit, it's wide open to the north, to the south. It just hasn't been drilled. It's so huge. And we know that, the host rock is a black shale, or it's called an alum shale. The continuity is very good. It's typically quite shallow. It's quite thick, like over 50 meters, sometimes approaching 170 meters thick. It's a very simple type mining operation where it would be open pit. We could grow it to be much larger, but the idea, for us going forward with Viken is to concentrate on a small area. That's better for your CapEx. It's better for your social license. But I would say a lot of the excitement around what we have in our uranium portfolio is based on the Viken deposit, given that there's some historical preliminary economic assessments that have been done that show how potentially valuable this type of deposit can be. But we've also staked up a bunch of projects called the alum shale properties further to the north. They cover a huge swath, 60 to 70,000 hectares there. We're currently flying that with an airborne survey to help map out the alum shale because it's very conductive. It's got a lot of graphite in it, got a lot of quite a few sulfides, mapping it out for getting drill targets. Because again, we're looking for shallow alum shale and as thick as possible, 50 meters or minimum to kind of make priority drill targets. And then outside of that, we've got three other projects, Ardnasvare, which is more a little bit further north, central Sweden, Sockjärn and Nineforce, which are not alum shale properties. They're higher grade uranium. They're intrusive related. There's potential for unconformity mineralization at Ardnasvare, which is, unconformity is similar to what you would find in the Athabasca Basin. These projects have over a percent U-308 uranium on the property in boulder fields. They're quite advanced in that they've been drilled. There's known uranium mineralized zones on them. The last work that was really done on them was in the 1980s. So a bit of the history with Sweden is that in the 1980s, the Swedish government went quite negative on nuclear, and that a lot of that had to do with what happened at Three Mile, the nuclear accident that happened there. It really wasn't an accident. It was more of a almost an accident, but it scared a lot of the world, and it put Sweden into a negative light, obviously, on nuclear. And then Chernobyl didn't help when that happened in 1986. It's taken a while for Sweden to kind of come back around to be positive on nuclear, but now we're there. And really the main reason is because, again, the geopolitical turmoil, energy prices went through the roof when Russia invaded Ukraine. And then just the desire for Sweden and you know, all the developed countries to want to go forward with the green energy transition. This is not really possible to do with just solar and wind. We need nuclear as part of the energy mix to kind of wean ourselves off of fossil fuels.
So in terms of the uranium ban, what are you expecting in terms of timeline? And if it turns out to be what you expect, what could that mean for your company as well as uranium?
Yeah. Good question. So, I mean, the most, well, sir, it kind of takes back to December of 2024. The Swedish government put out an inquiry report that it was very lengthy, explained information about the uranium moratorium, you know, why it should be lifted, how it should be lifted, and when it should be lifted. And the government also put out a press release at that time. I believe it was December 23rd. It was a good Christmas present. Basically all the party members from the current Swedish government that form the coalition that's center right, they all had a quote saying, you know, they're very supportive of this happening. They have a majority. They're saying they have a majority to approve lifting the ban on uranium mining. And that kicked off a consultation period whereby, stakeholders could comment on the inquiry report. District Metals was one of the stakeholders. They got to comment on it. Other groups included municipalities, counties, government, other government agencies, all sorts of associations, environmental groups. So they've basically taken all those comments, and then they've done a draft bill to lift the uranium moratorium. And more recently, on June 12th, the government submitted this draft bill for judicial review. And so that's when nonpartisan judges basically reviewed the bill just to make sure it's crystal clear. That there's no confusion. It's all part of the process of bringing a bill to parliament to be voted on. Much of Sweden and Europe goes on break as of midsummer, which I believe was June 21st or June 20th. And then people will start coming back in August. But it has been in the calendar that the government will start discussing the lifting of the uranium moratorium in September. It's not entirely clear when they're going to vote on the bill to lift the uranium ban. Could happen, September, October, November, but the plan is to get it voted on and approved before January 1st, 2026, because the, legislation in Sweden only changes two times a year, January 1st and July 1st. So they want to make sure they get the bill, buttoned down. Before January 1st, 2026. So then it goes basically live for all of 2026.
So in terms of risk and reward, if this pans out the way you would anticipate, what could this mean for the price of uranium in Sweden and your company in Sweden or your mining in Sweden? And if it doesn't happen, what's the risk? I mean, how do you see this playing out, as well as if it doesn't play out, then what risk is there for the investor?
Yeah, so I mean, probably one of the best examples that I can bring up is Continental Precious Minerals. In the last uranium bull market, reached a market cap of $330 million Canadian dollars. based on just their Viken deposit. And now we control 100% of the Viken deposit and it's totally royalty free. Our market cap is about a third of what theirs reached. I would say that they didn't do a very good job back then of showing the true value. They did a PEA that did not include the vanadium or the potash. Our next door neighbors did do a scoping study that showed that, and it showed some really good numbers from a scoping study that they did in September of 2023. Another way to look at, you know, valuations for District Metals is, you calculate the enterprise value, you know, divided by the resource that we have of the Viken deposit alone. You'll notice that, dollars per pound U3O8 for District is extremely low compared to other, you know, peer uranium companies. So that's another good calculation to do. I'm not allowed to do it for investors, but, that's definitely a good metric to use. And then, in the last uranium cycle, or, you know, somewhat after the last uranium cycle, there were two monetizing events of low grade uranium deposits in Southern Africa that were multi-billion dollar monetizing events. So in 2007, Uramin got bought out by Areva, which is now Orano, for $2.5 billion. And that was for, you know, quite low grade uranium, didn't have any vanadium, potash, or anything else to it. Called Trikopik. And then Extract Resources got bought out, I believe, in 2012 or 2013 by CGN, a Chinese state-owned nuclear company, for $2.2 billion. And I mean, that's post-Fukushima. So that was pretty impressive that happened. And then it's interesting because then you look at during that time frame, you know, what was the biggest buyout or monetizing event that happened in the Athabasca Basin, you know, home of the high grade uranium around the world. And it was really just Hathor got bought out by Rio Tinto in 2012 for $650 million. And then that turned into a liability for Rio Tinto. They ended up selling it a couple of years ago to UEC for about $175 million. So didn't work out too well. But so there's a lot of ways to kind of look at District Metals and point, you know, towards much higher valuations, you know, given what I've just talked about. And then, you know, switching to what's the potential downside. So if the vote to lift the uranium moratorium isn't successful, which would be very, very much a surprise because the current government says they have a majority to approve the bill to lift the uranium moratorium, but say things do not go our way, the Viken deposit and our alum shell properties, they're polymetallic. So they're not, you know, uranium is actually not the primary metal that brings the value. It's actually vanadium and it's also potash. So we would still, by the Mining or the Minerals Act in Sweden, be allowed to mine the Viken deposit, and we could recover, you know, the vanadium, the potash, everything else, but we'd have to put the uranium back in the tailings. Obviously that's not your optimal scenario, but that is something that we could make a decision to do if the uranium moratorium doesn't get passed. But I think, again, everything that's happening in the world today, geopolitically, is pointing to this lift is very likely going to happen. All the wording that we're getting from the politicians is all pointing towards that as well. So, and then of course we also have our base metal polymetallic side with District Metals that, you know, has good value to it. I mean, we're looking for another giant base metal polymetallic deposits such as you know, Boliden's Garpenbeti or Zinkgruvan mine. Our projects are within this area of Sweden called Bergslagen, which is central Sweden. It's known for these giant base metal polymetallic deposits. So the work that we're doing at our Tomtebo project and a project that Boliden has brought into our collaboration called Stålberget is fully funded by Boliden. It's $10 million Canadian being funded by Boliden over 4 years. District Metals is the operator We get an operator fee from that. So it's, yeah, it's good to have, you know, two parts to the business, especially as we wait for, you know, hopefully this uranium moratorium to get lifted.
Garrett, if you can tell us about, that's been very helpful, first of all. So you guys have a huge uranium play. You got polymetallic, potash, and you said rare earth as well?
Yes.
And so you got quite a different variety of things. If you're saying if uranium doesn't, you know, doesn't project as you would anticipate, there are other stuff going on. So if you can tell us a bit about kind of the capital that you guys have and what your plan is to do with that capital, from now until, I guess, for the next 3 months, 6 months. I mean, if you can take us down the line of what you're projecting in terms of timeline and milestones.
Yeah, definitely. So our last financing that we did was in May of this year. We raised $6 million with Pareto Securities, who were huge in backing that financing with us. So that financing was concentrated with Swedish shareholders. So $3 million of that financing went to a very well-known mining group that I'm not at liberty to say the name at this point, at least. And then the other $3 million of that financing went to Swedish funds, family offices, and high net worths, which is very good because we have actually we're listed on the NASDAQ First North Growth Market in Sweden. So a lot of those shares are now being held on that market, which it really supports, you know, everything that we're doing in Sweden that much more. So we're about 9.25 million in the treasury because we had some warrants getting exercised. So we have no need to do a financing anytime soon. Obviously our base metal, polymetallic projects are being funded by Boliden. And we're flying airborne geophysical surveys at our uranium polymetallic projects, which is, I think all in all, it's the burn there is going to be about $2.5 million to fly all these airborne surveys. And then the plan is once the moratorium is being lifted, then we will start to initiate a updated preliminary economic assessment that hopefully we'll be able to get out for like mid-2026. I would expect that would cost somewhere in the range of 500 to 600,000, depending on how much metallurgy we decide to do. But obviously it also depends on where exactly we decide to do the mining scenario, because it's such a big deposit. You know, 4.3 billion tons, but I mean, in a mining, and that's just in the inferred, the indicated is much smaller, but, our, you know, preliminary economic assessment will be targeting something like 100 million tons. So just a fraction of the inferred, resource. So we want to pick the sweet spot in terms of, you know, that it's as close to surface as possible, it's as thick as possible. And then from a social perspective, you know, it's in the best area that as possible. So we'll go forward on that basis. Yeah, with targeting about 100 million tons mining scenario.
Garrett, if we can take a little shift to your corporate structure, if you can, I think you touched a little bit about it. Your shares outstanding, fully diluted, how many warrants you have. And if you can also touch upon the equity ownership, what percentage is owned by insiders and institutions, if you're able and at liberty to share your top shareholders or whatever you can share with us. And then lastly, if you can tell us a little bit more about your team and experience that you yourself bring, but also your team that you have around you.
Yeah. So I believe we have probably got about 160 million shares out right now. I'm not exact on that number, just because we've had some warrants getting exercised. I believe we had about 7 or 8 million warrants that were at 20 cents get exercised that brought in an additional, you know, $1.4 million. So we've probably got about 13 million warrants, with 3 million of them being at 20 cents and 10 million of them being at 30 cents. And those are expiring March of 2026 and February of 2027. The 30 cent ones being in 2027. And then, you know, options and whatnot, I believe that's typically about 10% of the shares outstanding. As typical for most companies. So that's kind of where the share structure is at. And some of our top investors, I mean, the Jordan Fund is a Swedish group, that's backed us for a number of years. They're excellent. They, you know, they probably hold an aggregate of 12 to 14% of District Metals. And they're a lot of the reason why we decided to get listed on the NASDAQ in Sweden. Other funds, Extract Capital out of New York, MM Cap out of Toronto. There's a whole bunch of funds, big supporters out of Europe. And then also National Bank, as well in Canada has a very big holding of us. There's quite a long list. And then insiders, I believe we have 4 to 5%. Myself, I have about just over 4 million common shares that I've purchased myself between, you know, 12 and 45 cents. And then Doug Ramshaw would be the next largest, insider to hold shares. I believe he's got 1.6 million common shares. And, And in terms of our team, I mean, I talked about myself, but you know, when we entered Sweden, you know, one of the most important things was to build up a technical team that knows base metal polymetallic deposits. And that's exactly what we did right away. So our VP exploration is Hein Rath, who used to work for Boliden for about 8 years, but he's been working in Scandinavia for almost 20. And he knows base metal polymetallic inside out and all the permitting processes in Sweden. Rodney Allen is one of our key geological consultants. He's kind of the grandfather of base metal polymetallic deposits in Sweden. He's written many a technical paper. He was with Boliden for 18 years or so. He took a lead role in the discovery of some new mineralized bodies at the Garpenbeddi mine that basically took it from near closure in the late 1990s to now being a tier one asset for Boliden. Our CFO is Marlis Yassin. She's amazing. She's done such a good job, you know, navigating some very unusual waters, like getting a listing on the NASDAQ in Sweden is not a typical TSX venture maneuver. And there's a lot of, you know, regulatory hoops to jump through. Even when the insiders are, you know, we recently issued options, stock options and RSUs and DSUs to insiders. And so we have to list on the TSX, you know, the SETI, but also on the SFSA for the NASDAQ. And so we're very well covered, by Marlis as our CFO and corporate secretary and that side of things. We have a very small board. Obviously, I'm a director, then there's three other directors. Doug Ramshaw, very well known in the industry. He was a director of Great Bear Resources that got bought out by Kinross for about $1.8 billion. So he's got good technical background, but also excellent strategy and capital markets experience. Joanna Cameron, I worked with at NextGen Energy. She's a lawyer. Obviously good to have, you know, a lawyer on as part of the skills matrix. And then Jonathan Chalice, he's a mine engineer by training and also a great capital markets experience. He worked as a broker, worked with the Ivanhoe Group. And then on the strategic and technical side of things, you know, Sophia Shane, she was with the Lundin Group for 28 years. She knows Sweden inside out, has made some amazing introductions. Galen McNamara, geologist that I worked with at NextGen, who's now the CEO of Sumo Silver, that's merging with another silver company. So we're always bouncing ideas off of each other. Rob Chang was an analyst at Canator for uranium, very focused on the uranium side of things. So it's a really, really good team that's just seems to be getting better and better as we go along here.
Jared, enjoy this time. If someone wants to follow up with you guys or wants to invest, have any questions, if you can tell us about your tickers one more time, where they can find you on the website, as well as any email or way to contact you.
Yeah, so our primary listing is the TSX Venture. Our ticker symbol there would be DMX. And then we've got an OTCQB listing. That would be DMXCF. And then our listing on the NASDAQ First North Growth Market in Sweden would be DMXSE. And then it's also a SDR, so after it. But the main thing with the NASDAQ is DMXSE.
SE for Sweden, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Jared, if anyone has any questions, can you give us the website as well as a way to contact you for questions?
Yeah, website www.districtmetals.com. There's a tab on the homepage where you can contact us directly. info@districtmetals.com is a good one. I mean, I answer a lot of the emails, but things are getting quite a bit busier. So that works as well. My email is gainsworth@districtmetals.com. I think that's a good way to reach out.
Well, Garrett, thanks so much. Enjoy this time.
Yeah. Thank you. That was great, Steve.